WMFO Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there's no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Good morning. It's the 11th of January, 2023. My name is Arthur. There is no little Arthur with me this morning. Sorry I missed last week. This week I'm going to finish off yours truly, Johnny Dollar. The Chesapeake fraud matter. I spliced them all together. The last three quarter hour dramas. They were original air dates on those would have been the 19th, the 20th, and the 21st of October, 1955. Thanks.
From Hollywood, it's time now for Bob Bailey as
Johnny Dollar.
Hugh Bryan, Mr. Dollar. How are you this morning?
Not so good. I didn't sleep very well. How'd you do?
I think I have about what you want on John Reardon.
Well, if you haven't, I can get it from Mrs. Reardon.
What? Well, I thought you didn't want to tell her about the report, that her husband might still be alive.
She knows. She overheard us talking last night.
Oh. Well, what do you want to do?
I might as well look at what you have and get this over with. How about an hour from now?
I'll be waiting for you.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Universal Adjustment Bureau, Baltimore, Maryland. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Chesapeake fraud matter. Expense account item 6, $1.50. One collect telegram from Denver, Colorado.
I've located Frank Bowers as per your request. Cursory investigation discloses little evidence that would lead me to believe he might be the John Ridden of Baltimore. Looks like a ham bone to me, Johnny. What do I do now? Signed, George Hanley, George Hanley Investigations Incorporated, Denver, Colorado.
Item 7, $2, same thing, telegram from me.
Things are about the same way here. Sit tight, I'll see you in a day or two. Love, Johnny.
Once the telegrams were out of the way, I walked 3 blocks from my hotel to the office building of Hugh Bryan. It was an impressive place full of lawyers and doctors. Hugh Bryan looked a little haggard when I saw him.
It took me a while to get all this together. Half the night.
There wasn't that big a rush.
Oh, get it out of the way. The sooner you have what you need, the sooner you can make sure, and the sooner I won't worry about it anymore. Did you talk to Elizabeth yet today?
No, just last night.
Oh, I thought maybe she might have called you this morning. I'm so sorry for that girl.
Well, don't feel too bad, Mr. Bryan. We both did everything we could to keep the report that her husband might be alive from her. Awkward as it was.
Yes, I know. I still don't understand it, I guess.
Well, a man named Coombs, an insurance official, thinks he saw Reardon in Denver last week using the name Frank Bowers. He's sure that Bowers was Reardon. If he turns out to be Reardon, the insurance company's been taken for $20,000 they paid to Elizabeth Reardon, just to set you straight.
That'd make Elizabeth party to a fraud. And John. Lord knows that's silly.
Well, silly or not.
Yes. Well, here's what I have. Now, this is one of the last pictures taken of John Reardon.
Mm-hmm. Have the negatives?
Yes. Here. And these are some vital statistics on him. The physical part I got from his doctor.
Mm-hmm.
He stood an examination about a month before the accident.
This the doctor's name here?
Yes. Now, these other things are in his background and education. Here, a copy of his marriage license and birth certificate.
How did you get hold of these things?
Well, I handled a lot of business for John, filed a lot of his papers for him. These were just packed away. It took a while to find them.
Hey.
Hmm?
A copy of his fingerprints?
Well, would those help?
More than any of this other stuff. Fingerprints aren't standard papers in anybody's file.
Before John went in the Army, he did some engineering work for the proving grounds in Aberdeen.
Oh.
He was fingerprinted there. It was a gag at the time. He had a set of his own blown up and put on the wall in a picture frame. You know, just a joke.
Yeah.
I dug them out of his personal things. Now then, here's a copy of his financial records, tax returns and whatnot.
I spent about an hour in Hugh Bryan's office going over material that would help me in the investigation. The pictures and fingerprints were the most helpful items. After I'd finished, I went back to my hotel, packed my bags, and checked out. Expense account item 8, $398. My hotel and incidentals in Baltimore and plane fare to Denver. I got there at 9 in the morning. The air crisp, thin, and full of sunshine. I rented a car at the airport and drove into town. A half an hour later, I was talking to my detective friend, George Hanley.
How do you like Denver, old pal?
I haven't been here for a few years. Doesn't look the same.
Bigger and better, huh? They're thinking of putting up buildings as big as those mountains over there. I love it. So does the wife.
I'm glad.
You ought to try a place like this for a while, Johnny.
Maybe I will.
Ought to find yourself a girl and settle down.
Let's us settle down, Georgie.
Huh? Oh, sure.
How'd it go?
You asked me to look into Frank Bowers. I looked into him as much as I could without talking to him. There you are, Johnny. His bank account, his friends, his troubles, his enemies, everything.
Mm-hmm. How about his police record?
One traffic violation 2 years ago. Never been in any kind of trouble around here. Gets along fine with everybody.
Well, tell me about everybody, Georgie.
His laundryman, the milkman, the guy who tends bar in his neighborhood, the man he buys gas from. I talked to all of them.
How about the people he works with?
Well, he don't do much of that as far as I can see. He's got an office downtown, calls himself a consulting engineer. Goes there once or twice a week to pick up his mail.
Well, now, that's a very nice way to be able to live. Is he starving to death, Georgie?
No, he's got a good bank account. Makes regular deposits. Money comes from a New York bonding firm. He owns a little two-bedroom house out beyond Park Hill. Paid $38,000 for it.
Wow.
Sleeps in one bedroom, uses the other one for a kind of studio, putters around with clay, oils, and according to the nosy dame who lives across the street, he tries to write.
How about his friends?
Lots of them. Pays his bills, gets drunk now and then, normal.
Tell me about his wife.
He hasn't got one. Lives alone.
Find out who he goes with, Georgie.
No. As much as I could find out, he doesn't go with anybody.
Enemies?
Well, the guy in the cleaning shop hates his guts. Bowers doesn't like his shirts with starch.
Did you check out the residency business?
As far as I could. He bought that house out in Park Hill in 1951. Paid cash for it. Record of the sale gives his former residence is Toledo, Ohio.
Well, how long has he been a resident here?
As near as I can figure, and this is just rough, 4 or 5 years ago, the first financial transaction was the house he bought. The next was a car. He could have been here a long time before that, though.
Well, the time element would fit for Reardon. What do you think, Georgie?
I think you're probably wasting a lot of money investigating this guy. He doesn't seem like the kind of man who's hiding out from anybody.
Here, look at this photo. Is this Frank Bowers?
Yeah, I'd say so.
5'11", 170, olive complexion, no scars, no glasses, brown hair, about 35.
Could be him from that, yes.
This is a picture of John Reardon, and the description is Reardon's.
What do you want to do now?
Keep on it. I got George Hanley busy making a check with some people in Toledo who could find out whether or not a Frank Bauer had once lived there. Then I took my rented car and drove out to the address Hanley had given me. It was in the east side of the city near the airport, a one-story frame house, a 53 Merc in the driveway. I'm looking for Mr. Frank Bowers.
Oh, who are you?
Johnny Dollar.
Oh, I'm Frank Bauer.
Well, I'm an insurance investigator, Mr. Bowers. I'd like to talk to you.
Oh, come on in.
Thank you.
Take a chair anywhere, huh? What's on your mind?
Just making a routine check, Mr. Bowers. Thought perhaps you could help me.
Well, I don't know anything about my neighbors, if that's that kind of thing.
No, I'm running down a report that came across our office in Baltimore.
Baltimore?
Ever been there, Mr. Bowers?
No.
Swell place on Chesapeake Bay.
Well, I like Denver. What's this all about?
Well, do you happen to remember a few days ago when you were at a place called the Ship's Tavern?
Well, that's in the Brown Palace.
This was last Friday, to be exact.
Should I remember? What'd I do, steal an ashtray or walk out on a check?
Well, a man from Baltimore was there that day, Mr. Bowers. His name was Coombs. Paul Coombs. You met him.
Well, did I?
Yes, right at the bar. You had a drink or two with him.
Well, I might have. Don't know whether to admit it or not. What are you getting at? I don't understand this.
I know it seems confusing. Maybe this will help. Take a look at this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you must admit, you look a great deal like the man in that picture.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose I do. Well, I'll be darned. Hey, I'd do it that. You know, this could be a picture of me.
That's why I'm here, Mr. Bowers. You see, the company I represent insured the man in this picture for quite an amount of money. His name was John Reardon. He was lost in a boat accident in Chesapeake Bay 5 years ago. The Mr. Coombs who met you at the bar here last week thought you were John Reardon.
Well, I don't blame him. But I'm not. Close, though. Now, want a smoke?
Oh, thanks. Thanks.
Sure.
Mr. Coombs was a lifelong friend of John Reardon's. I have his sworn statement here about that meeting with you and the certainty of his identity.
You do?
Yes, right here. Would you like to see it?
Well, not particularly.
I understand you went to Ohio State. What year did you graduate?
I didn't go to Ohio State. Look, what is this, huh?
Well, that's what you told Mr. Coombs. It's in the statement.
Oh, I remember that bird now. Oh, I might have told him anything, Mr. Dolly. You know, he's one of those inquisitive kind, real sure of himself. Yeah, I remember. Look, don't tell me they sent you all the way out here from Baltimore.
They did.
On that guy's say-so?
Mm-hmm.
That's funny.
Did you go to college, Mr. Bowers?
What?
I'd like to clear up that detail. Did you go to college?
Well, yes. I went to Carnegie Tech, 36 through 40.
You haven't lived all your life in Colorado, then. Where else have you lived?
Look, do you have any right to ask me questions like this?
No, but you'll help me a lot if you'll answer them.
Well, why not? Okay, I've lived in New York, Pittsburgh, Kansas City, Toledo, around the country. Came here a few years ago with my health. Seemed good for my asthma.
Ever been married?
Once in 1942. It didn't last long. Oh, what else you want to know?
Well, look, you in a hurry? I can come back later.
No, it's not that. Well, look, you seem like a nice guy, Dolly, but it just makes me uncomfortable answering these questions of yours.
I appreciate the time you've given me already, Mr. Bauer. Please understand, it's a matter of establishing identity.
But you know who I am. I just told you.
That's true.
I don't like this business much. Is there any way you can eliminate it?
The most positive identification would be from fingerprints.
Oh?
Now, Mr. Bauer, I'm not so much interested in who you are as in proving that you're not John Reardon. If you volunteered a set of fingerprints, it'd save me a great deal of work and you a great deal of trouble.
Well, sure, why not?
We drove downtown together to George Hanley's office and used the portable fingerprint kit. I took a complete set of Frank Bauer's prints he attached. I thanked him for his time and trouble, and he left. If he was trying to cover something, it certainly wasn't apparent from his conversation or reactions. There had been a moment when I was sure he wasn't Frank Bauer. On the other hand, I was sure that he wasn't John Reardon.
That cuts it, Johnny. Right thumb and index prints don't match at all.
Oh, not even close, George.
And I thought I was getting somewhere. I found out he was never in Toledo, or at least never registered or licensed as an engineer. Well, these prints do it. When are you going home, Johnny?
I don't know.
There's no reason to stick around any longer.
This is crazy.
You proved your case with the prints.
He was too anxious to help me prove it, Georgie. You ask any ordinary man on the street two personal questions about himself, and he'll tell you to go jump in the lake. You ask him for his fingerprints, and he's liable to smash you.
So?
Get on him. Stay with him 24 hours a day. Get a couple of other men.
It'll cost you money.
Get busy. Expense account item 9, $200, detective service. I didn't believe Frank Bowers. I didn't believe his background. And most of all, I didn't believe his fingerprints. Johnny Dollar.
This is Western Union, Mr. Dollar. Message for you from Baltimore, Maryland.
Okay, go ahead.
Received your air special regarding investigation of the Chesapeake matter. You've proved Frank Bowers of Denver is not John Reardon of Baltimore. Fingerprints don't lie, therefore logical to believe John Reardon really dead. Come on home. Your expenses are running too high. That's signed Pat Kelleher, Universal Adjustment Bureau. Should I mail this to you?
No, that's all right. Can I send an answer?
Yes, sir.
Pat Kelleher, Universal Adjustment Bureau, Baltimore, Maryland. Fingerprints don't lie, but people do. All the time. For all sorts of reasons. It may be finished as far as you're concerned, but I'm just beginning. Love, Johnny. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Universal Adjustment Bureau, Baltimore, Maryland. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Chesapeake fraud matter. I'd sent out to prove that John Reardon had not died back in 1950 in a boat accident on Chesapeake Bay. To prove that he was still very much alive in the person of one Frank Bowers, currently living here in Denver, Colorado. Everything, all I could learn of the man's history, reports from his neighbors, friends, even his fingerprints, everything indicated he really was Frank Bowers. And yet, for some fool reason or other, I wasn't convinced. Expense account continued. Item 10, $63 for one overcoat. Denver can be a very cold city when the wind comes in from the north and it decides to snow. Almost as cold as the damp wind off Chesapeake Bay on a certain day back in 1950.
Hi.
Hiya, George. How's it going?
Well, I washed Bowers' house from 6 last night till 2 this morning. He read a book last night in the living room. He made a phone call and then he went to bed. And then I went home and went to bed.
How many men have you got working?
2 others beside myself. We're keeping an eye on Bowers around the clock. I go on again at 6.
Okay, good.
I don't know why, Johnny. He isn't your guy and you know it. Fingerprints proved it. We can watch him from now till doomsday and nothing's gonna change that.
Oh, look, don't you start, Georgie.
Huh?
I got a wire from my home office this morning telling me to close it up and come on home.
Why don't you close it up and come on home? I like to make dough. I'm in the private detective business, but I hate to see an old pal doing a lot of work on nothing.
Why don't you shut up?
Sure. We can go on like this forever, can't we, Johnny?
Ah.
Goodbye, Johnny.
I walked around the streets of Denver trying to enjoy the sights, but mostly I wasn't enjoying anything. I was thinking about the whole case from beginning to end, and my only reason for hanging on and being stubborn about it was the fact that Frank Bowers had been too anxious to cooperate, too anxious to help me prove so easily that he was not John Reardon. And then something else happened. He got anxious once more. Yeah?
Mr. Dollar, this is Frank Bowers.
Oh, hello.
You didn't tell me where you were stopping. Phoned everywhere in town. Wondered how you made out.
Made out?
Yeah, with my fingerprints.
Oh, yeah. Well, they don't match at all.
Oh, then I'm not your man.
Guess not, Mr. Bowers.
Well, I was just curious. Didn't hear from you after you took the sample of my prints.
Oh, that was pretty nice of you to help me out. How can I thank you?
Well, you could buy me a drink if you want to.
Hey, you're on.
All right, meet you at 6 at the Ship's Tavern.
It was the voice of a confident man again. An overconfident man. The kind who sandbags in a poker game. Who knows about a boat ride and a horse race. And so help me, I knew I was right about him. Expense account, item 11, $14, booze. For Frank Bowers and myself in the Ship's Tavern. The same bar, incidentally, where a week before a close friend of the deceased, John Reardon, had run into Bowers and sworn he was John Reardon. When Bowers came in, he was followed by George Hanley, as per my instructions. I saw George pick a stool at the far end of the bar.
Well, I suppose you'll be packing up and leaving the old Mile High City pretty quick now, huh?
Did I say that, Frank?
No, but I just suppose it. You will, won't you?
Oh, I haven't decided yet. What do you think I should do?
Huh?
I said, what do you think I should do?
Are you kidding me?
Well, maybe I'm just kidding myself. But you don't seem like the kind of fella you should be, somehow.
No, I don't.
Now, you were too nice about answering questions when I came out to your house the other day. Too nice about letting me fingerprint you so I could compare the samples with John Reardon's prints. Too nice about calling up and asking how it all came out. Came out bad, thank you.
I'm a pretty nice fella.
Yeah? That's what the book says.
What book?
I had a private detective friend make one up on you before I even got here. Friends, enemies, money, and whatnot. All very nice.
Of course it is. You know what your trouble is, Dolly? You don't trust anybody. I'm a nice fella, and you don't trust me. You don't believe what you see.
I believe the fingerprints don't match, if that's what you mean. You're the bird I don't believe.
Hey, should I get sore?
If you want to.
I'm not gonna. You know why? Because I'm a nice fella.
Sure you are. But you ought to get mad when a man calls you a liar.
Oh, you didn't call me a liar.
I meant to. You're a liar.
You know what? I'm not a nice fella all the time. I'd kind of like to hit you in the face or something right now. You're needling me.
Am I?
Uh-huh. I think I better call up a girl I know, see what she's doing for dinner.
Well, see if she's got a friend.
No, you're too nasty, friend. You sit tight. Order me a drink. I'll be back in a jiffy.
He's a little drunk.
Sure he is, George. He's also worried.
Any particular reason for getting him that way, Johnny?
Yes, he's using the booth in the lobby. Scoot out there and see if you can get a line on who he might be calling.
Right.
A long 10 minutes later, Frank Bowers came back to the bar. He was weaving a little when he got on the stool next to me. George Hanley followed him back inside and took his place at the end of the bar again.
She's busy.
Took her a long time to tell you that.
She's a girl who takes a long time with everything.
Oh, what's her name?
Huh?
What's her name? The girl you just called.
Oh, Rita.
Rita. Well, here's to Rita. Come on, drink up. You might have to eat with me.
I don't want to drink to Rita, and I don't want to have dinner with you. What do you think of that? Huh?
I thought you were a nice fella, remember?
God of blazes.
Hold on. Hey!
Johnny, you may have something with this bird at that.
How come, George?
That call he just made, long distance to Baltimore, I got that much.
He said he'd never been there, didn't know anyone there. Keep an eye on us, Georgie.
You betcha, pal.
Hey, Frank!
Hey, look, what's the matter, friend?
I just left you, I thought, for good.
Oh, come on, I'll buy you dinner.
You buy me nothing, Dollar. Go on back to Baltimore.
Why don't you?
What?
Why don't you go back to Baltimore?
What's that supposed to mean?
Just what it means. Well?
Maybe we better talk some more.
Fine.
My car is in the lot here.
Okay.
You're after me, aren't you?
Well, let's say I met you yesterday to get some facts. Let's say I drank with you tonight to find out what kind of a guy you are. I've done most of the talking up to date. Now it's your turn.
Uh-huh.
Well?
I don't know whether I got anything to say to you.
Oh, make up your mind, will you?
Look, suppose I were John Ridden. I'm not. But suppose I were.
I can't tell you what a court would do about an insurance fraud.
No. No, you're just a clumsy ox stumbling around for some answers, and you haven't got any yet. Get out of my way.
Wait a minute.
He's a very handy fella. I didn't want to interfere, Johnny.
Stay on him. See where he goes, what he does, Georgie. Hurry.
You all right, pal?
Sure. Hurry. I wasn't all right at all. Frank Bowers was not only big, but fast, and he caught me off guard. I went back through the hotel lobby up to my room and lay down on the bed, and I waited for the phone to ring. Sooner or later, it'd be George Hanley or Frank Bowers' tale reporting some development that had solved the whole case. But the phone didn't ring. Nothing happened. No one phoned, no one came by. I went to sleep about 1 o'clock. The next morning, George Hanley called and asked me how I was feeling after the punching session in the parking lot. He reported that Frank Bowers had jumped in his car, driven straight home, and gone straight to bed. Expense account item 12, 48 cents, postage. Cost of mailing a sample of Bowers' fingerprints to Washington, D.C. At 8 o'clock that night, I had another phone call.
Hi, baby. This is George Hanley. How do you feel?
Okay. What's up, Georgie?
I'm still keeping my eye on Frank Bowers. He's nervous, all right. Been staying in the house all day. I can see him walking back and forth in the living room. He must have smoked a package of cigarettes every hour.
Uh-huh. Has he used the phone?
Yeah. Looks like long-distance stuff again. You know, place the call, hang up, then wait for the operator to call back.
Possibly Baltimore again.
Possible. How about it?
I'm thinking. Where are you?
Right across the street from his house.
Be right out. The heater in my rented car wasn't working that night. I remember that part very well. My feet and hands were numb with the 10-below weather when I flicked off the lights and pulled up alongside George Hanley, stationed across the street from Frank Bauer's home.
It's some weather.
Yeah. How's Bauer doing?
I think he's got a visitor with him now, Johnny. Must have showed up while I was calling you. Big guy wrapped in an overcoat. I've seen him move around the room a couple of times.
George, let's go in and shake him up. I'm tired of all this.
You think he's reared?
I don't know, but I want to wind it up one way or the other.
Okay. Want to wait for his friend to leave?
Nope. Oh, it's a nutty thing.
You're the one who's nutty. You already proved he isn't John Reardon. That's all you wanted.
I know. Now I want to prove I'm getting old and crotchety and don't believe what I see and hear. Bear with me, Georgie.
Sure, pal. You're crazy, but I love you. Hey.
Huh?
Visitor's leaving. Make him?
No. An overcoat and a hat aren't much to go on. He's...
Georgie, come on! Hey, Johnny, look out!
Down, the gun of the man in the overcoat had gone off a couple more times. The nearest bullet came 6 inches from my head. Without my gun, all I could do was hug the ground for cover and try to stay out of his line of fire. The shots deafened me for a moment. When my hearing came back, I heard someone very close to me. It was Georgie. He was dying. Johnny Dollar.
This is the operator. Ready with your call to Mr. Pat Kelleher in Baltimore. Go ahead, please.
Hello?
Hello, Pat.
Hey, I got your wire. What's all this? What happened?
We're still trying to find out. The man calling himself Frank Bauers was killed an hour ago. George Hanley, one of the operatives I had watching him, was killed, too. We've got a vague description of the killer.
Are you all right?
Yeah, but I'm going to be tied up with the police here.
Well, you need money for bail or anything like that, just draw a draft on the company. I'll confirm it.
Thanks, Pat.
Too bad about your friend.
Yeah, he was a good guy. I want to find out who killed him. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to Universal Adjustment Bureau, Baltimore, Maryland. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Chesapeake fraud matter. Expense account continued. Item 13, a quarter for some aspirin. It turned out to be a long night. Several homicide officers arrived at the double murder scene within a matter of minutes and got right down to the business at hand. Frank Bauers had been shot to death. George Hanley had been shot to death. Lieutenant Tom O'Neill was in charge, a big blonde man who seemed to know what he was about.
Okay, let's see that ID again.
Here you go.
Insurance investigator, hmm?
That's right.
Okay. What was your business here with these two men?
My home office in Baltimore had reason to believe that Frank Bauers was really a man named John Reardon. Reardon was supposed to have died 5 years ago. I was sent out here to investigate it since there had been a $20,000 claim in the matter.
Sure.
I hired George Hanley to help me out. He was keeping an eye on Frank Bauers. I came out earlier tonight to give him a hand and the shooting began.
Any idea who did it?
A big man in a top coat and a hat. I really didn't get a look at him, Lieutenant. I was busy with George Hanley.
Sure. You carry a gun?
Sometimes. I didn't have one tonight.
You tried to chase the killer?
I said I was busy with my friend.
Yeah, that's right, you did. Well, how was your investigation coming along?
Frank Bauer's fingerprints didn't match the samples I had for John Reardon, but it didn't satisfy me. There were a lot of things about him personally I couldn't accept. I harassed him a little last night, and he got pretty excited and slugged me. This was after I found out he'd been trying to call Baltimore.
Who in Baltimore?
I don't know.
Well, tell me about this harassing. You'll make a check with the phone company.
Well, I needled him purposely, trying to scare him into a blunder. I think I was doing pretty good. I'll never know now.
What else you got to say about your case?
Well, that's about it, Lieutenant.
It is, huh?
Well, that's all I got to say because that's all I know about it.
Next time, be careful with your needling tactics, boy.
I was doing what I thought best on the case.
Sure you were. You were doing swell. You let a friend of yours get shot down in front of your eyes, not to mention the other guy. You can't give us a description of the killer or a hint at the motive. Now, maybe George Hanley wasn't a friend of yours at that.
Why, you...
Dad, take it easy, kiddo. Take it easy. Remember to blow the bell, I'm sorry. You've had quite a night. Nobody in your business or mine knows what's behind the door when he kicks it in. I'm just a cop trying to get straightened out, so I push too hard sometimes. We'll get it taken care of. Nobody walks in a man's house and shoots him down without somebody hearing something or seeing something. I mean, somebody besides you. Now, my men will cover every house in the block, in this whole area if we have to. Bound to be somebody somewhere.
The dogged Lieutenant O'Neill turned out to be 100% correct. In fact, he turned out to be 300% correct. For by 11 o'clock the following morning, his men had located three different people who had information about the brutal murders of Frank Bowers and George Hanley. The first was a man named Randall who had lived across the street. He had seen Bowers open his front door and admit the unknown killer. He said he wore glasses. The second was a paper boy who had come to collect while the killer was there. He stated that the killer and Bowers were arguing when he came up to the door. The third witness, a housewife, gave the most important information as to the man's description.
He was a good deal taller than Mr. Bowers.
How much taller?
3-4 inches at least. I saw him standing in the doorway from here. He had on a brown tweed topcoat. My husband has one just like it.
How old would you say he was?
45.
Have you ever seen him before?
No.
Would you know him if you saw him again?
Yes, anywhere.
You got that good look at him, huh?
Yes, the porch light was on.
Here's something, Dollar.
Lieutenant O'Neill had issued an all-points bulletin based on the combined descriptions given by the witnesses. In the meantime, his men had checked the local cab companies and found out that one of the drivers had carried a fare to Frank Bauer's home at 8 o'clock in the evening. The cab driver verified the housewife's description of the suspect and added the important information that he'd picked up the man at the airport. When that was checked, it was found the man had come in on a plane from the east at 5:45 in the afternoon. He had used the name Orrin Williams. Expense account item 14, $8.95. Another long-distance phone call to Baltimore and Pat Kelleher.
Well, I'll be darned. Do you have to stay there, John?
Of course I have to stay here. I'm a material witness. Not to mention the fact that a pal of mine was shot down.
Don't get on your high horse, John. It was just a question. Have any idea what it was all about?
Well, at the moment, I'm just sure a guy named Orrin Williams flew in, shot up two people, and beat it. If we had Williams, I'd give you the whole thing on a silver platter.
You're awfully touchy.
Well, this thing has gotten out of hand.
Well, I won't press you on it anymore, John. You do what you think is best. As far as the company's concerned, it's really not our business anymore, is it?
It's our business until it's cleared up.
Well, I mean Bowers. He wasn't John Reardon.
Dollar?
Hold it, Pat. Yeah?
Answer from Washington on your wire.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Here.
Let me see. Pat.
Yeah?
It is our business after all.
Huh?
The lieutenant here sent a hurry-up request to Washington on some of Bowers' fingerprints I mailed a couple of days ago. They check out.
I don't get it.
Bowers was John Reardon.
Oh. Well. Well, where'd you get the samples of Reardon's prints that didn't check out?
From Hugh Bryan, Reardon's attorney.
Well, I better call him.
Don't you dare. Don't open your mouth. I'll handle it when I get there.
Tell me about this fella, Hugh Bryan. According to the phone company, that's the man Bowers was trying to call in Baltimore.
I told him all I knew, and Lieutenant O'Neill listened thoughtfully. It became apparent from that point on, since Bowers' true identity had been established through Army records, that the bulk of the case could be concluded not in Denver, but in Baltimore. Expense account item 16, $216, plane fare and incidentals, Denver to Baltimore. I arrived at 10:15 in the evening. Checked with the Baltimore police, who had been informed of the case by Tom O'Neill in Denver. At his request, they'd taken no action as yet. From the police station, I went directly to Hugh Bryan's residence. The house was English, conservative, and expensive. The fire in the living room looked cheerful when the door opened. Elizabeth Reardon did not look so cheerful.
Hello, Johnny.
Hello, Mrs. Reardon. Didn't expect to find you here.
No, I suppose not. I never expected to see you again.
Elizabeth, I have something to tell you.
Don't tell me now, Johnny.
It's about your husband.
All right.
I want to tell Mr. Bryan, too.
He's upstairs in his study.
Wait. Look, I've done what I thought best about all this, and I'm trying to do what's best now.
It doesn't make any difference, Johnny. I'm a married woman again.
Huh?
Yes. Hugh and I were married this morning. Excuse me.
I walked in and watched John Reardon's widow, alias Frank Bowers' widow, now Hugh Bryan's bride, disappear up a column stairway. The news that she had married Hugh Bryan cleared up some of the small doubts in my mind. When Bryan came back down the stairs with her, he looked anything but the happy bridegroom.
Hello, Dollar. You're a late caller.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. Congratulations.
Thank you. How did you come out in Denver? Everything okay?
No, everything's not okay.
Well, what's the matter?
Do I have to tell you?
I'll run along upstairs, Hugh. It's getting terribly late.
All right, dear.
Good night, Mr. Dollar.
Good night, Mrs. Bryan. There'll be some men out to see you pretty soon, Bryan. Policemen.
Oh. Liz.
Yes, dear.
I think you'll be interested in what Mr. Dollar has to say.
What? I don't understand, Hugh.
I wasn't in Philadelphia yesterday, Liz. I was in Denver, Colorado.
What?
I flew there to see John. He's been alive and living there all this time.
Hugh.
I'm sorry. This is only for her benefit, Dollar. I'll tell it just once. When it gets into court, it'll be different.
How did it happen, Bryan? John Reardon didn't die in that boat.
No. He was picked up in the bay by a fishing boat on his way to Florida. They didn't have a radio on the fishing boat. The first port they came to was Charleston. John phoned me from there and told me all about it. Now, this was 10 days after we all thought he was dead. That part was all accident.
Sure.
The rest of it was a little different. Liz, it was his idea. You've got to believe that.
What was his idea?
Not showing up ever again. Letting everyone think he was really dead. Making you a widow.
I don't believe it.
He hated his life here. Yes, everything about it. He was in debt, right up to his ears. Of course, there was your money, but Well, I flew down to Charleston to talk to him. He was like a crazy man, kept saying there was a way out. I didn't know what he meant at first. Then he came right out and said it was his chance to get away from all the things he hated. He knew how I felt about you then, how I feel about you now. He said I could have you for a price.
What was the price? Those checks he got every week from a New York bonding concern?
Yes.
What did they come to?
$25,000 a year, regular weekly payments. I could afford it. I could afford anything for you, Liz.
Did he come right out and tell you he hated me?
He just said he wanted to get away from everything. And it went that way for 5 years. I believe I asked you to marry me every 6 months.
Yes.
But that didn't work out either. And then, one day, along came Johnny Dollar. How does it feel to be so efficient, Mr. Dollar?
We don't have to go into that, do we?
No.
I'll admit you did everything to throw me off. And it threw me off. Especially the fingerprints you provided.
Didn't John Reardon insist his name was Frank Bowers and do everything he could to make you believe that was true?
He did too much to make me think it was true.
Where is he now? Where's John?
He's dead, Mrs. Bryan.
Oh.
Truly dead now. He was shot to death last night by Mr. Bryan. Mr. Bryan also shot a friend of mine, didn't you, Bryan?
Yes. John got scared, called me, said he was going to tell everything to Dollar, blow the whole thing.
Hugh.
All I wanted out of this was you, Liz. He didn't want you. I did. Last week you decided to marry me. It took you 5 years to do that. And it took him one afternoon to decide he was going to come back to you.
The proof that John Reardon's widow is guilty or not guilty of a fraudulent insurance claim is a matter for Eastern Fidelity to decide. The matter of Hugh Bryan and two murders is a matter for the courts. Expense account, item 17, same as item 1, expenses from Baltimore to Hartford. Item 18, $89 even, car rentals, miscellaneous, etc. Expense account total, $1,124.98. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Remember, please, there'll be a new exciting story on Johnny Dollar beginning next Monday.
Next week, a quiet, sleepy little town in Mexico and a beautiful senorita that... Well, things didn't stay quiet and sleepy for long. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by John Dawson, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in this week's cast were Gene Bates, D.J. Thompson, High Everback, Will Wright, J. John Daner, Tony Barrett, Paul Dubov, and Forrest Lewis. Be sure to join us on Monday night, same time and station, for another exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Open calendar. What's my schedule looking like?
Next Thursday, you will be caught in an emergency flash flood between Park and First Street.
What? No, that doesn't work. I'm busy then. Decline. Decline.
Floods don't exactly work around your schedule. Disasters don't plan ahead. But you can. It starts with talking to your loved ones about making an emergency plan. So don't wait. Communicate. Visit mass.gov/MEMA. Brought to you by the Massachusetts Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, and the Ad Council.
Thank you, Ad Council. Yes. We heard prior to the public service announcement, yours truly, Johnny Badaller, the Chesapeake fraud matter, an original air date, three original air dates, because that was a quarter hour daily drama, the 19th, 20th, and the 21st of October, 1955. My name is Arthur, and you're listening to 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford Tufts Freeform Radio. I'm going to conclude the rest of the program with an album, the hilarious comedy album that has Mr. and Mrs. America rolling on the floor from coast to coast. This is from Knockers Up by Rusty Warren, which was given to me from a thrift store out in Kansas. So we'll see you next week, because I'm just going to play this out to round out the hour. Give about 18 minutes of airtime. Thanks for listening.
Good evening. Once again, the Golden Falcon proudly presents that lusty redhead with her songs for sinners, Miss Rusty Warren.
Hey, ho, hey! I wish that I could shimmy like my sister Kate. Now she shakes it like a jelly on a plate. And all the boys in the neighborhood, they know she does it. Yeah, honey, she does it good. Now my daddy wanted to know last night. You over there, want to shake it up a little bit? You know what we're going to talk about tonight, so you might as well loosen up, girls. Well, all right, if you don't want to shake it here, I'll tell you what to do. When you go home tonight, you stand in front of the mirror and you take your earrings, your makeup off and everything. Will you do me a little favor and go, would you do that? And you'll say, my God, that dirty broad is right. It really does feel good. Yes, if I could shimmy like my sister Kate. Now she shakes it like a jelly on a plate. And all the boys in the neighborhood, they know she does it. Yeah, daddy, she does it good. Now my daddy wanted to know last night why all the boys treated Katie so right. I know that I'm late, but I'll be up to date. If I could shimmy like my sister Kate, shimmy like my sister Kate. She's got big boo-boos. That's like Knockers, honey. Yeah, shimmy. And if I may start the show by saying, we are going to discuss a subject very near and dear to our hearts. One that I talk about and that you do so very well. Sex. And as I look around, I see a lot of married couples in the audience tonight. So if I may, I would like to talk to the wives about what they brought with them. Otherwise known as the driver of the car. Yes, ladies, I don't know if you really understand that every man in the audience tonight has a mission to complete. He was born for this mission. He is dedicated to this purpose. And his whole life is a continuous campaign to give it to us. Give what? What do you think? Every man was born to give us happiness. Oh, yes. And every woman here tonight will receive this gift. But I am sorry to say we ladies don't appreciate it. No, we do not, ladies. You seem to forget that this man has had this instrument of joy since it was a little boy's. And it is now ready for us. But are we ready for it? No, we are not. No, we are not. In fact, I'm sure of all the ladies in my audience tonight, after receiving such a wonderful gift like this from her husband, has never once got up off that bed and said thank you. Oh, girls, you have not done this. You have not made him feel wanted. And what is a man but a little boy?
Just a little bitty boy.
All he wants to know is that he is wanted. A little pat on the head and for you to say, Daddy, you did a good job. Oh, laugh, my dear. You don't realize, but you are a chosen woman. Every wife in the audience tonight is a chosen woman. He doesn't have to give it to you, you know. He chose you to give it to for the rest of your life. You can at least appreciate it, because man was born for this purpose. Girls, he has so much to give to so many with so little. But every chosen woman in this audience feels that she must give a little part of herself also. And there are many women who don't do this. Can you remember before you were married some of the little wonderful things that happened to you? I wonder if you girls have ever thought back into those premarital days. Those sweet virginal days when you thought nothing of whatever it was. And he convinced you to marry him. He chose you, yes. He could have had a dozen other broads, but he chose you. He took one look at you and said, I'm gonna give you my name. Isn't that wonderful? In the house and everything. And besides that, he's gonna let you have his kids. Isn't that tremendous for him to give so much? You girls don't know how wonderful it is. Like I say, he could have given it to anybody else. Do you remember some of the things he said to you before he married you? Remember when you were in the car? Ah, yes. There you were sitting in a car with him, a kind man, up to a point. A generous man, sometimes.
But right now you were alone with him. And you thought you'd be playful. Most women are that way. Curiosity, they call it. And maybe you got a little too playful. And he looked at you and said, "Hey, baby, prove to me you love me." She looked at him and said, "Oh, I'm not that kind of a girl." And he married you. Sick boy. But he doesn't regret it, because she still remembers those words he said in Mr. Passion. "Marry me, baby, and I'll give you to every morning, every afternoon, every night, and twice on Sundays." Am I right, girls? After 15 years, you're lucky to get it. And when you do, it's a present. He brought it all the way home from the office for you. On the bus. Under his hat. You girls remember, did your husband ever get home an hour earlier from work? You know what I mean, honey? With a hat and a briefcase? Walks into your kitchen with that look in his eye? And you've got 17 pots on the stove, the roast is in the oven, the kids are in the other room, they're watching television, they're thinking, M-I-C-K-E-Y, M-O-U-S-E. Oh boy, you need him right now. Boy, if there's anything about the American husband, he's got perfect timing. But you love him and you look at him and say, "Not now, honey, later. Not now. The food is hot. Mother's coming over for dinner. The children are here. Later, honey." Then he looks down and says to himself, "What am I going to do now?" He says, "Oh, I don't know. Go mow the lawn or something." Can you see it now? 6:30, 7 o'clock at night, all these guys out front. "Hello, Charlie. Hi, John. What's new, Pete?" "Not a thing. Nobody's getting any. Just mowing the lawn." While he's mowing the lawn, what do you think the wife is instigating in her sick little mind, in her sick little kitchen? She says to herself, "I know what I'll do. I'll feed him good. Lots of roast beef and gravy, potatoes, hot biscuits, strawberry shortcake, ice cream." She figures she'll feed him up real good, put him in front of the television. If luck's with her, 9 out of 10, he'll go to sleep. But gentlemen, tonight I am on your side. Tonight he does not go to sleep. He stays up right through the late
show.
And he looks over at his wife for that look that every wife knows. She looks back at him and says to herself, "Oh God, here we go again." "I just gave it to him 2 weeks ago. The sex maniac wants it again." But she says to herself, "He's been good. Oh yes, he's been very good. He didn't beat the children. He gave me a little extra house money. Bought me a new dress for the cocktail party. Oh, I'll give him a little." Big deal. You know, it reminds me of a story about two fellas meet each other in the street one day. One fella said to the other, "Hello there, George, how's your wife?" He said, "Better than nothing." So the wife looks over at the husband and says, "Okay, tonight's tonight." And he races upstairs. And the shower's running. This guy is so happy, he's even singing in the shower. "I'm gonna get some poontang. Gonna get some poontang. Gonna get some poontang tonight. Gonna get the poontang. Gonna get the poontang. Gonna get the poontang. Oh, is he happy? I don't have to tell you." call. Oh, he feels wonderful. He gets out of the shower, he dries himself off, he goes over to his shelf and he takes down the aphrodisia. He's gonna be sexy tonight. Goes into his bottom drawer and takes out the navy blue silk pajama with the initials on the pocket. And he calls to his mate. Yes, he calls to his mate as every man has called to their mates throughout the centuries. Yee-haw, I'm ready! And what do you think the oversexed wife is doing? Cleaning the ashtrays, washing the coffee cups. God forbid she should have a dirty house in the morning for the girls. Or if it happens to be the maid's day in, she has to clean the whole house. The maid shouldn't think she's a slob. Then she in turn races upstairs. Oh, well, if it's gotta be. Mother said we had to do a few things. Might as well get it over with. 2 weeks here, 2 weeks there. Don't make a diddly damn bit of difference, I hope. And the shower's running. The short shower. She gets out of the shower, dries herself off, takes her perfume and goes... She hops into a nightie, hops into bed. He hops out of bed, takes the chair, puts it against the door. God forbid the kids. Then he makes love to her. He loves her like he don't even know her. Just as things are building to the pitch they had never known in all the years they were married, all of a sudden you hear, "Mommy!"
The first side. Side one of the album Knockers Up by Rusty Warren. It was a 1960 release, I believe, from Jubilee. I figured it was given to me. I can play it. This is Safe Harbor Hours. And thanks for listening. My name is Arthur. And this is the Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio.
Stand.